Audience, welcome into the Get Body Podcast. This is your host, Sharcross, aka your boy Cher. And as always, we're back from the dead from our long hiatus. Say hello to the Jungle Kitty himself, David Dutton.
Hello!
And to my right, Dr. Luke.
Who do you think you are?
Audience.
Oh my gosh.
Today, as you're listening, we got Byers Benjamin Clark, Mr. BBC himself.
BBC!
Let's go.
Dutton, what did we cover on this episode?
We covered a lot. You should listen to it. It's something special.
Okay, that's right. Audience, if you want a fascinating episode about aviation, about Ben's life, the goods, the bads, the learning process, how he got so fit, how he got his pilot's license, where he's headed from his pilot's license, the ratings, all the details, all the infos in this episode, please check the show notes down below. Follow him on his YouTube channel. Audience, we hope you enjoy. Doses.
Byers
from West Virginia.
My real name is Byers, yes. Byers Benjamin Clark.
Yes, not to be confused with the Byers Automotive here in Columbus.
And you're from West Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
And your parents?
I was born in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh.
Falcons.
Falcons.
my family moved from Georgia to West Virginia in 94.
Okay.
And that's... majority of my childhood was in Parkersburg, Vienna, West Virginia. So, yeah.
What year were you born?
92.
Okay, cool.
90s.
1992, yeah.
And so you lived there. Obviously, you went to high school there. What was something from high school that, like, do you have a story from high school or something that you, like, really enjoyed from high school?
From high school?
Yeah.
Football, played football, was a captain. Loved those days, man. Those were some fun times for sure.
Were you a wide receiver?
I was not a wide receiver.
Really?
No,
but like that.
I was a multitude of things. I was actually a lineman. I was
okay.
A pulling guard, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pulling guard.
Were you bigger than you are now? Were you heavier?
Yeah, I was about 225.
Well, how much you weigh now?
Whoa.
195.
Okay, so you're like 35 pounds heavier. 30 pounds heavier.
Roughly, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was a pretty big boy.
Now, you playing on, you're playing on offense. Did you play defense, too?
Mm-hmm. Nose, middle linebacker, some. My senior year, I was fullback, and...
Oh, that's a big fullback.
Yeah, it was pretty big.
Especially in high school. Like,
I know. I'm just saying, some you probably wrecked some people with fullback.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's high school, right? So it's like ancient history, but like, I topped out after eating, like gorging for like a month at 160.
Nice.
So you would have been what? Like, you know, 65 pounds my senior.
What do you weigh now?
200.
Solid.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. He's in cutting season right now.
No way.
He got sick and lost 10 pounds.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Dang.
Key weight loss advice from us, by the way.
Yeah, get sick.
Just get sick.
Yeah. I gained some in Vegas, and then I'm back down again. The other thing is, I regressed. I like to say I'm built like a fire hydrant, right? Squatty body. But then John told me the other day that I'm built like a big bean. That's not the way you want to go. But
I would have never guessed you, Ben, to be a fullback. Like, you, I mean, you're built now. I mean... I wouldn't have thought that.
I said linebacker.
I could see that. Or safety or something like that.
Yeah, I would have said safety.
Yeah.
So you like football?
Yeah, I mean, I played it. I don't really watch it now.
When you were in high school, did you have, like, aspirations to do any sports collegiately or anything like that?
I did, but I wasn't good enough, you know. I went to school to get my degree and... start working.
Where'd you go?
West Virginia University, WVU.
The Mountaineers.
Yeah, Mountaineer.
They
had a rough game against Pitt.
Mm.
Backyard bash. Are you a Mountaineers fan?
I'm a fan, yeah.
Yeah. What are some of your fondest memories of college?
SAE Baja program, my senior design class. So let's see, that would be my junior and senior year. We had to pick a senior design course, and it was, I think, 3 semesters long. So it was like junior year, second semester through the next 2 semesters of senior year. Mm-hmm. We had to do senior design. We had to pick what we wanted to do. And there was like formula SAE, where you build a Formula One car. That was a whole team. There was SAE Baja, where you could build an off-road buggy type thing and then race it against all the other schools, you know.
Yeah.
Did a competition. There was a hybrid design. There was design, build, fly. There was a number of different courses you could take. But the one that piqued my interest the most was the Baja program. So you build this like off-road buggy and you get to race it against like all the big like MIT and all these colleges, you know, like you want to try to like build the best thing you can. So I joined that, me and my two roommates. Well, one roommate and then another friend, which he was basically a roommate because he was always with us. Justin and Dustin Burns. Justin Brumley, Dustin Burns, two good guys. Shout out to them.
Yeah, shout out.
Justin and Dustin, let's go.
Let's go. But great, great people. But actually, Justin now works for General Motors in Michigan. He just got married a couple years ago, and they're building a house, him and his wife are. And Dustin, I haven't connected with him in a couple years, but I went to his wedding with Kelsey, actually, almost 3 years ago now. But yeah, super smart people. But yeah, we decided to do the Baja program. And it was cool, man. Like, we had the year before us as car, but we had to build design improvements for it.
Yeah.
And our race was the end of our senior year. We drove, I think, 20 some hours to somewhere in Texas. I can't remember where we went in Texas. Shoot, I can't remember the exact location. But, we drove from Morgantown, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Trailered the car and all the team all the way to Texas.
Yeah.
We raced all the teams. I think we got 13th out of like 30 something teams.
Nice.
Yeah, we did really well. It was fun. But that was like my fondest memories were building that car, the super late nights, just like trying to fix all the bugs on it.
Yeah.
And like driving it through like downtown University Morgantown, like ramping over like the steps, and we'd like rip it through the grass and stuff. Oh man, that was so much fun. Like last minute, like before we were packing it up, on like we had to fix these bugs, you know, and like me and like only a couple people from the team would like stay up super late and like work on it. And like that was our life, man. Like we just wanted that car to like work as best as we possibly could. And we all had the drive to do it, you know. So yeah, we would just stay up super late. We'd bring beer with us, you know, we'd drink beer and work on this car till the wee hours of the night and test driving in the streets, man. It was fun.
Drinking beer and ripping down the stairs, man.
That's not the smartest. The beer probably like was less of a,
It's fine. It's college.
I know.
It's college.
Yeah.
And I don't think driving a buggy counts as drinking and driving, does it?
Oh yeah.
I'm sure it does.
Probably.
Sorry, audience, don't do that.
Yeah.
If you find a buggy, don't do that.
You get busted on like a scooter, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, that is
like,
really cool.
What did you have to drive it? Like, what in the race was it like a?
So they had different tests. So like they had an agility test where you had to see how quickly you could make it through like a road course kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to find some pictures I could show you. Super cool. But there was that. There was like an acceleration test. We'd pick our lightest guy to do that. They empty all the gas out of the tank, air up the tires, you know, like all those little things to try to get like peak performance out of it. Acceleration. There was a hill climb. So you could like gear your, like some teams had like multiple speed transmissions. Most of us used CVTs, continuously variable transmissions. It's basically like an automatic clutch kind of thing. But some like fancy teams like made like geared transmissions and stuff. Like you had to design all that stuff and build it, right?
You built your transmission?
our transmission was the year before us's transmission, but it had a reverse.
Did they take it out of another vehicle, or did you build it from scratch?
The team the year before us, they built it from scratch, yeah.
Holy smokes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'd have shit, like, these are rudimentary. Like, they're not, like, super complex trannies by any means, but, you know, there's still a gear drivetrain, you know, inside of a fluid-filled box.
That's sweet.
It's just going all over my head at this point.
So when you guys finished and you guys placed 13th, what happens to the buggy?
What happens to... Oh, so this is the cool part. So the buggy... How do I want to say this? So they keep it around for a couple of years for, like, design cues for the next team. But generally speaking, it's a two-year thing where, like, they'll build it fresh 1 year, and then the next year they'll build improvements to it to try to make it better. So we had the year two or three years before us's car still there. And we had to scrap it. We had to take that car and, like, pull it apart and basically throw it in the dumpster. And me and my two, Justin and Dustin, we asked the director, Ken Means. I don't know if he's still there or not, but he was, like, the program leader at the time, our coach or our professor. We were like, Dr. Means, hey, we have to throw this thing away. Like, is there any way we could take that chassis and, like, you know, just, like, maybe build something on our own? And he was like, well, if you take it out of the dumpster and it's not there in the morning, you can have it. Ooh. You know, I'm not going to say anything. I was like, we were like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So we went and got that buggy, got the frame, got, like, all the A-arms and, like, the parts for it. And I had a pistol at the time that I traded for a Yamaha 350 Warrior four-wheeler. And we cut up the four-wheeler and mated it to that old frame. And then we built our own buggy that was actually like a shifter cart kind of thing. But it was, like, an off-road style shifter cart. I actually have a video on YouTube that I could show you.
See in the link.
Yeah, yeah, see in the link below. Audience.
Yeah. Now you'll see my YouTube channel. Oh, my God.
Okay,
there's some OG, like, pretty interesting videos. There's CrossFit, too. There's CrossFit on there. But anyway, yeah, my 350 Warrior buggy that me and my two best friends from college built is on there. So,
was it sweet?
It was awesome, man. Oh, so our test grounds were, like, right outside of Morgantown.
Yeah.
We called it the ash pits. And it was basically where the coal-fired power plant dumped all their ashes after they...
Oh, my gosh!
And it was just, like, this huge oasis of, like, jumps. And, like, people would take their dirt bikes out there and, like, ramp it and stuff. And we would go out there, and that was our test grounds. Like, we had,
Did you do, like, a five-point harness and everything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, wear a helmet, five-way harness, it had a roll cage, like, the whole nine.
How many times did you roll it?
We definitely rolled the carts, but I don't know how many times, but it was pretty sketchy. Like, we had the cart from a couple years past, and, we definitely rolled that one. But the new buggy, like, we babied it, you know, we wanted to keep it fresh for the comp.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the new one, but the old one that you had, like, you know,
just
four-wheeler, old buggy, birthed. New creation.
That sounds fun.
We tried to stay as safe as possible.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
Hearing you talk about that makes me want to go do it.
But the fact that you, like, built it yourself, like, and you made the that's really cool. Because I'm not mechanically minded like that at all, and so it's very foreign to me.
That's, like, my happy place, man. Is, like, working with my hands, like, building things and, you know, try to improve, like, designs. So it's what I enjoy. Might sound weird, but...
No, that's cool.
So when you were done with college, were you able to find something job-wise that fits that description of, like, hey, that's my happy place?
Yeah, my first job, I worked on airplanes. So, I worked for a company called BE Aerospace. It was in Fenwick, West Virginia, kind of the middle of nowhere. It's an old coal mining town right next to Richwood, West Virginia. I think the town at the time I was there had like 1,700 people. Very small.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. But that's where the aerospace plant was in the middle of nowhere. And I did that job for 3 years. It was a great job. Very terrible place to live.
So, yeah. How far away was that from, like, your family?
That was about...
And this is actually a closeness question of how close are you to your family?
About 2 hours.
Okay, that makes sense.
So what did you were able... What were you doing there? Working on planes, what does that mean?
So... This might be a little over information, but so I worked a lot on Part 23 aircraft, which is like beach bonanzas. What else? Piper Saratogas, Cessna, or Piper Aztecs. Like, those are all Part 23 planes. And what
so
I did.
Small planes that you see take the banners at, like, over a beach.
Very similar. Yeah, yeah. Small, single engine planes, some twins. There's Part 23. And then there's Part 21. Part 21's like de Havilland DHC-8s and like big turboprop passenger carrying planes that they use for like charter and that kind of thing. But the majority of what I did while I was there for my 3 years is STC projects. So I worked on type Part 23 planes. Our company designed pneumatic de-icing systems. So what that is planes, you know, if you fly into ice, right? Ice reduces lift. If you reduce your lift too much, the plane can't stay in the air. So you don't want to go flying through a cloud that has ice in it, right? Because you could crash because the plane can't stay up. So we designed systems that shed that ice off the wings so the ice couldn't build up on the wings. So what I did was I worked on STCs, which is a supplemental type certificate, which basically is an aftermarket part. Like, if you were to buy an aftermarket thing for like your plane, that's what an STC is. It's not directly from the factory, but it's a supplemental type certificated part to put on your plane. So our STCs were these pneumatic de-ice system components. Specifically what I did was pneumatic de-ice timers. So like what actuated the pneumatic de-ice boots. So on the leading edge of the wing, we had these rubber boots that would inflate with air, usually bleed air or vacuum-driven back pump off the engine drive, produces air pressure, and that air pressure goes into the leading edge of these wings in the boots and inflates. And when they inflate, you can look up a video on this on YouTube. It's pretty interesting. But if you get in stuck in SLD conditions, super cool liquid droplets, you get ice buildup. It's usually rime ice. On the leading edge, and you wait till like a quarter inch of it builds up, the pilot sees that, and then you actuate a button, and that button makes those rubber boots inflate with air, and then boom, it just like sheds off, and then the slipstream, the air going over the wing, is what pulls the rest of that ice off. Okay, so the timer that makes those actuate in a certain sequence, when you push the button, there's an electronic component that actuates the valves to make the boots inflate. That timer, we had STC's kits, basically wiring harness to adapt our timer into that system to replace the old rotary timers. So I did a lot of work with that STC. It was cool, man. I got to drive all over, drove down to Florida one time, met what I thought was a drug runner airplane guy. He let us use his airplane to like do fit checks, and so I got a lot of experience with that. Just driving around meeting people, and I had to cold call a lot of folks to like see if I could use their plane to do a fit check, and then we had to do an install conformity, and it was just a wild time, man. It was like the Wild Wild West, you know. Just got to call people and be like, hey, can we use your plane? And they'd be like, yeah. I'm like, sweet, I'll meet you there at this time, you know. And then I get to tour their facility and try to sell them this timer, and it was fun. It was like a salesperson, road engineer, and I'd go do these things by myself, you know. It was like they trusted me to do that. It was sweet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right out of college.
Right out of college, man. Yeah.
That's cool. Awesome.
Our research department, they just pinged me and just let me know that you recently got your pilot's license.
I did.
So did this job spark your interest and desire to get your pilot's license?
Wait, time out. Were you flying planes back then without your pilot's license?
No.
No, he was driving to these places.
You're driving to places and they were flying the planes with a fit. Like, you were using their on the ground, or you were using it? Like, how were you using airplanes?
Oh, the planes were on the ground. We would just do the fit check, like, while the plane was there.
No.
We wouldn't actually fly. There was one time where we had to start up because there was a squat switch issue. Long story
Classic squat switch.
We're actually doing that on Friday morning. We're doing squat switch.
This is what you get. Okay.
No, I just, okay, you can keep going with your private lesson. I just thought, I was like, man, you're going out there, you're meeting some people,
at
you're
first
calling,
two, I was
you're
like,
flying their planes,
no,
you're trying to sell them things. I was like, wow, this is
never got a free ride like that.
Okay.
But I wish I would have. That would have been cool.
Especially from that drug runner. That would have been really
cool. Yeah, he was an interesting dude. He was at Pompano Beach, Florida, and one of his mechanics, I can't remember all the details, but one of his mechanics was like pulling some panels off in what appeared to be like some storage areas that possibly they could have been putting some illegal substances and maybe driving or flying to and from remote islands or something.
Yeah. He's got it figured out. He's got it figured out.
Yeah. Wow.
But what was the original question?
Pilot's license.
Yeah. Pilot's license. Did this job spark you? I mean, like, was kind of like the starting point for your desire to get your pilot's license? Or?
Great question. No, it didn't spark the interest in aviation. I've always had an interest in aviation. My grandfather, my dad's dad.
Byers the first?
No, he was Gary.
That's so funny, Luke.
Hey, man.
That's so good. Because Char has this whole idea of how this, like, family name is being passed down. It's like, Byers,
Gary.
Gary's dad was Byers.
Oh,
yeah,
so
your dad's Byers.
That's my dad's Byers.
And
I saw where you were going, and then I saw what was happening, and that was funny.
Byers.
So Gary apparently was a pilot.
Gary was a pilot. Military career, Army pilot. He was actually the commander of the 220th RAC, which is Reconnaissance Air Corps for the Army, in 1967 through 68. And what the 220th RAC, they called them the cat killers. What they did was they were a spotting service for bombers to come in. They would mark targets so the bombers knew where to drop bombs. And basically they flew these small Cessna high wings. They called them IO bird dogs. And they had these white phosphorus rockets on a small Cessna high wing plane. Like, look up. It's a Cessna IO bird dog. It's like a small Cessna plane with white phosphorus tip rockets. They would fly super low to the ground. They would spot the enemy. They would shoot this white phosphorus rocket, hit the ground. Smoke would come up. And then the bombers in the F-4 Phantoms, they would know where to come down and do, like, their strafing run to shoot, you know, the bad guys. So it was a pretty wild job, if you think about it. Like, these pilots were just flying. So it would be an Army pilot and then a Marine. Yeah, there's a picture of one. Beautiful. A Marine would be in the back as the observer. Okay, and the Marine, I think, was the one that would actually call in, like, the coordinates and that kind of thing and whatnot. But anyway, it was a pilot, Marine observer. They would fly super low to the ground, like 100 feet over the ground. There's actually a couple books out. One is 100 feet over hell, and the other one is Cat Killer 3-2. And Ray Carl wrote Cat Killer 3-2. It actually mentions my grandfather in it.
Whoa.
Yeah, I actually connected with that guy back in 2017. I was, like, interested in learning more about my grandfather. He passed away in 2013.
Okay.
But yeah, I contacted Ray Carl and we emailed back and forth. I don't know if he's still around or not, but I was just interested in, like, learning as much as I could. But look up the book Cat Killer 3-2, and it talks about Gary Clark, my grandfather, commander. But anyway, yeah, he was a pilot and had many hours. When he retired from the Army, he got into general aviation. Mm-hmm. He had two planes, 19969, which is Cessna Skyhawk. I think it was a 72 model, or no, it was an M, 172M. But him and my grandmother had a hangar house in Washington State. and they would fly back and forth from Washington State to Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. They had a house in Kitty Hawk, house in a hangar house in Washington State. And
what's a hangar house?
Hangar house is like basically what it implies. I mean, it's a hangar for your airplane, but it's also like a living space too.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, toilet, kitchen,
something space. Small. Yeah.
Like a big garage.
Yeah, a big garage.
That would, yeah, you could put your plane in.
Yeah. But yeah, they would like migrate back and forth. So anyway, in the 90s, they taught my dad how to fly in 94. My grandfather was a CFII, which is a certified flight instructor, but he could also teach instruments. So he got into that, taught my dad how to fly in 94. And I was born in 92. Mm-hmm. So yeah, growing up, like, it was just interesting to me. I've just always had like a, it's fascinating to me. Like, I love everything about aviation. I like the systems. I like knowing how things work. You know, what makes a plane go up? What makes it go down? What makes it turn left, right? You know, how do the avionics work? How do you read the instruments? You know, like all of that, like the logistics of it, the systems of it, like all that's just super fascinating to me. I love it. I love everything about it.
That's awesome.
That is cool.
So after your job in basically
middle of West Virginia.
Yeah. Middle of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
After that job, did you continue sticking around with aviation, or did you move? Did you look for different jobs? Like, was there something in your life that changed that led you to a different season of life? Or
yeah, so my ex-wife at the time basically gave me an ultimatum and said, you know, I'm moving to North Carolina. You can either follow me or not. And I chose to look for another job. Found another job in North Carolina, and then moved.
What'd you end up doing? What was your job in North Carolina?
So that was with aviation as well.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That was a job at U.S. Cargo Systems in Goldsboro, North Carolina. So we worked on cargo planes. Some of the planes I worked on were the Japanese C2, Kawasaki C2. So Kawasaki, same company that makes like motorcycles. They also make cargo airplanes. They have an aerospace division. So I worked on the C2 cargo plane, specifically on like the systems that hold the palletized cargo in place on the floor. So like you see like the C-130 pictures of like parachutes pulling out of the back of planes and like, you know, cargo dropping. Well, we made the systems that like allowed all that to happen on the inside of the plane for various planes. So the name applies to cargo systems, you know, like we did that kind of stuff. So like there's locks, there's rollers, there's trays, there's
like for Fast and Furious, that kind of thing.
Yeah. You've seen the movies?
Yeah. You wanna launch a car out of a plane? You need Ben.
I was actually thinking about a Call of Duty when you call in a care package and that thing comes out of the sky.
There's an old movie that I can't remember what the name is, but it's like Dumbo Drop or something that they like, it might have been a black and white movie where they drop an elephant out of the plane. It's nothing. It's not.
Why are you watching black and white movies?
I watched it as a kid.
I'm sure Ben helped make that.
You probably didn't. Yeah. You want to drop an elephant out of a plane? You want to ride a car out of a plane? I mean, you need better.
That's cool. So you made it, like, yeah, that's, I mean, you're describing so many things that I take for granted. Like, I don't really realize that, you know, I guess people have to make that. Like, people have to figure out how that works. And I don't know, it just...
Mm-hmm.
Well, not just like, hey, you're manufacturing a plane. It's you're manufacturing a very specific part.
Yes.
That actually is connected in, like, instead of the original part to, like, relay between when the person hits the button and the thing working for, like, a part of flight. It's just, it's a very, very, like...
Very, yeah, specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I just never... You see those in movies all the time. Never once has it crossed my mind. I wonder how that works. And now I know somebody who knows how it works.
Yeah.
Back to where we're at. So you're working at this place in North Carolina, and are you flying? You're not flying yet there.
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, yeah, I did start some lessons in 20. Well, let's back up. So my grandfather gave me some lessons, flying lessons, when I was 13, 2000, early 2000s. So I have some time in my logbook from that. And actually, our last flight together was from First Flight Memorial to where he parked his plane at in North Carolina on the coast. So First Flight is, if whoever is listening, if they don't know, First Flight is a memorial for where the Wright brothers had their first flight, first powered flight. And it was a series of, you know, two or three or four, you know, flights, I think. But the memorial is where that took place. So, yeah, our last flight together was from, they have an airport there that you can land at, was there to where he parked his plane at, was our last flight. So one of these days I'm going to recreate that flight. But, yeah, I'm waiting.
Yeah.
Maybe Dad and I will do that together or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's cool. So you started flying up here and there with your grandpa, apparently, and then kind of through college and stuff, didn't really do it, and then you picked it back up.
Yeah, so sometime early 2000s, I was very young. You know, he was still logging time for me at that point, because you have to log hours to like get to each stage in your pilot career. So, yeah, sometime then, picked it up in 2017 when I was working at U.S. Cargo Systems. Got solo there, so I was able to fly by myself, but I didn't have my license at that point. And then, you know, for money concerns, I didn't fly anymore at that point. And, picked it back up again in 2021, I think, and got my license 4 or 5 months later. So, yeah.
That's really cool.
You had mentioned previously, and you can go in depth as much as you want or cover however much you want. You had mentioned your ex-wife. So could you tell us a little bit about like how that was kind of playing alongside with your, you know, as you're going through work and kind of the story that you've kind of laid out so far?
Yeah. So like my 20s was a lot of learning. I met my ex-wife in college when I was 20. In 2012, and I thought she was the prettiest thing in the world, you know. And we hit it off. We actually met. Let's see. I don't know how much detail I should really put in here, but we met online. I put a Facebook post out that said I'm bored. It was summer of 2012. And anyway, she like messaged me and was like, "Hey, you should take me for a motorcycle ride." So I took her for a motorcycle ride. Then 2 or 3 days later, we went for another motorcycle ride. Morgantown has a lot of twisty, windy roads. Great for motorcycle riding. We went out 857, which, if you're from Morgantown or know the area, is it's a pretty mountainous, you know, scenic ride. Really nice. So we went on 857, did a loop that we had done before, I think. Then we came back. We were headed back to Morgantown. And normally I would come off of this turn, like, pretty fast to get back on 857. And this time I was like, no, I'm not going to goose it much, you know, because I had a motorcycle at the time. It was pretty fast. It was a 07 CBR 600 RR. You know, it was a crotch rocket. This thing was sick,
yeah.
Dude. It had a, Two Brothers carbon fiber exhaust pipe. It was so loud. And it was basically just a, you know, machine to go fast, you know. Like, at that point, I was so full of testosterone and just, like, loved going fast. And, I mean, that bike was just the sickest thing since sliced bread, you know.
What color was it?
It was red and black. It had HID lights. Man, it was so cool. I traded bikes. So I'm way off subject.
That's okay. That's okay.
I had my first bike I bought on a whim, and it was wrecked, and it was a Buell Firebolt XB9R or something like that. Yeah, no. Yeah, it was an XB9R. Bought it for like $1,900, fixed it, sold it for $3,750. Then I bought another bike for $3,000, sold it for $4,700. Then I bought this bike, which was a CBR 600, for $5,000. So I had, I don't know what that is numbers wise, but I bought, sold, traded up until I could get what I wanted.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the story how I got the bike. Didn't have money at the time.
So you're coming around this curve.
Some
sick bike.
Yeah, on a sick bike with, you know, my soon to be ex-wife on the, or soon to be wife on the back. And anyway, I'm going normal speed, and I look up and there's a turkey hen on the left side of the road that comes from left to right. And I'm like, oh shit, like that thing's like coming right for us. Like, what do I do? So I slammed the brakes as hard as I could. We're probably going 45, maybe 50. Not going super fast, you know, we're within the speed limit. Slam on the brakes, and I ducked, and the turkey tried to fly away. And when I ducked, it went right over my head and it hit her. She put her arm up like this, and she went flying off the back of the motorcycle.
Oh my goodness.
It's like slow motion. She completely fell off the bike and rolled to a stop on the right side of the road, like in the gravel, and her helmet came off. And I slammed the brake as hard as I could, kept the bike up, pulled over to the right side of the road and stopped, ran over to her as quick as I could. And I was like, oh my God, are you okay? And she wore contacts. And I just remember seeing gravel like on her contacts. That was rough to see, but, she was like coherent, like she knew what was going on, you know. Damn. But man, it was rough. So crap, I didn't think I'd get emotional about that.
Yeah, man. Okay.
So anyway, I called 911, and they had services come, you know, as quick as they could. And I called a roommate at the time, Jamie, and told her what happened. And pretty sure she called her parents, because I didn't know her parents at the time. And yeah, EMS came, or a volunteer firefighter came first. And then shortly after, a police officer and the ambulance came. And they took her in the ambulance. The ambulance driver actually was her best friend's brother or cousin, her best friend's cousin, I think. But anyway, so we knew him. You know, she they were tending to her. We knew she was okay. Like, she was moving her legs. She was going to be okay. Like, I knew that. But you know, at the time, I didn't know, you know, like what the details were. You know, we didn't know if there was broken bones. You know, we didn't know if there was spinal damage. Mm-hmm. We didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
You know, it was scary.
Yeah.
I kept it together until we got to the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, once they got her squared away and into a room, you know, that's when, you know, we're just waiting for her parents to come. I never met them before, so met them. And yeah, that's that story. So, she broke a bone in her back. I think it was two vertebrae had on the phalanges. So like, I don't know, Kelsey would be able to explain this better, but, there's like, some wing, or no, you're a doctor as well, Luke, right? So
DO.
Yeah, you're DO. So there's like wings on your spine, right? Like, what do you call those?
I mean, like transverse processes?
Processes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like a processy or two.
Transverse processes?
Yeah, totally.
We also are just like dissecting this stuff. And
oh, that's right.
You're actually dissecting. Like, so we're not just like figuratively like, oh, we're dissecting, you know, the words about you. Like, no, you're cutting open cadavers in one of the classes you're teaching.
Yes.
Yeah. So just for the record.
We saw them. So anyway, yes.
Meaning you in your class. Me and Char didn't see them.
No.
Okay. So your flanges broke.
There was two flanges that had cracks on them.
Okay.
And she had a lot of road rash on her, she had road rash from, I mean, she slid across the ground.
Yeah.
Oh, so they had to like scrub that out.
Yeah.
And,
that could have been so much worse.
Yeah. Luckily,
my gosh.
But it was a really rough time. So yeah, that's kind of how I met my ex-wife.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. What was the original question?
Sorry. So you don't have to talk about like how you split, but at some point she became your ex-wife, and where you were in North Carolina at some point, you guys split,
and then you were back in West Virginia.
So
is that how that worked?
We were in West Virginia, in Somersville, West Virginia at the time. 2017 is when we moved to North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Her sister at the time lived in Eden, North Carolina. Trying to think location-wise where exactly that is, but yeah. Was given an ultimatum, like, hey, you can either move or not. And I chose to move down there.
Okay. And then how did you end up back in West Virginia then?
Or did you go back to West Virginia before you came back to Ohio? Or did you go from North Carolina to Ohio?
So North Carolina to West Virginia.
Okay.
And then West Virginia to Ohio.
Okay.
Yep. So yeah, we lived in, bought a house in 2018 in a little town called Clayton. And for a while we lived just outside of Raleigh. I was driving, I think 3 hours a day. I was driving an hour and a half to work in Goldsboro, living in Raleigh area. So an hour and a half to work and an hour and a half back from work.
Wow.
That was a really tough, you know, 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I only did that for a year. We lived in an apartment. And I only did that drive for a year. And before that, my ex-wife was driving pretty far to and from work at the time. So it was kind of, you know, my turn to make the long drive to and from.
Yeah.
So I did that for a year. Then we bought a house in 2018 in Clayton, North Carolina. And that was an interesting, being a homeowner and, you know, having a place and, you know, that was an exciting time. But yeah, the years in Clayton and working for U.S. Carter Systems were very hard, being an engineer. Those were some very trying times, work-wise. You know, I was traveling, I was working for, you know, multiple projects. They worked you like a dog. And that's really when I became an engineer. Was within that time period. But it was fun work and it was rewarding. And, you know, I got to travel. I got to go to France. I got to go to Spain.
Mm.
I got to go to Germany, Japan. You know, I worked with a lot of interesting people and really, really got to become an engineer, you know. But yeah, the living situation at home wasn't the greatest. My relationship with my ex-wife, was not healthy by any means. We bickered and fought a lot over things that just shouldn't have been fought about. And at the time, emotionally, I was not very mature emotionally. And, I was figuring myself out and still am, it seemed at the time she was very concerned about money, you know, and like I needed to provide more, I needed to find a better job. And I need to be more like, you know, her brother-in-law, and I need to be more like such and such. Well, such and such has this job, and, you know, he's making this much, and, you know, you need to sell your motorcycle, and you need to sell your car, and, you know, it was all about, you know, catering to what she thought our plan should be. Lots of ultimatums. If you don't do this, I'm going to do that. Or, you know, that was kind of how that relationship worked. And it just wasn't healthy, you know, just wasn't healthy by any means at all. And, you know, I wasn't healthy either. And, my way of responding to that was, you know, not just agreeing, but arguing back for, you know, what I thought was right. And, you know, I drank a lot at that period of my life. I wasn't like a alcohol. Well, maybe I was an alcoholic. I wouldn't drink during the week nights, but I was a weekend warrior. I drank a lot on the weekends. And, you know, if we went over to visit her family, you know, I would drink with her brother-in-law, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. So then you've back to West Virginia.
Yep.
And you're still working for Jardinex remotely.
Right. Correct.
Right. Okay.
Yep.
And then you met.
Right. So, okay. Okay. All right. So yeah, let's move on to some happy thoughts and, try to move past the past.
Yeah.
And, that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So, yeah, 2020, November, moved back to West Virginia, lived with my parents in the house that I grew up in, Parkersburg, Vienna, West Virginia. You know, it was a rough start. It was a rough go. You know, here I am, 28. I'm thinking, you know, I established my career. You know, I thought my career was just going to be in, you know, ruins. You know, I thought my life was over, you know. And it took me a number of months to, A, completely stop drinking. Took me a couple months to just find myself, you know, figure out, like, I'm still working on that. You know, it's not just like it, boom, eureka, one day, I was good. You know, like, no, like, it's a lifelong learning, you know, I'm still dealing with everything. Okay. So, it took me a number of months, to realize, you know, and just decompress and, you know, try to assemble what's going on, you know, what do I do? You know, and that was a hard point in my life. Mm. It's a hard, months. I decided, so one of my best friends, since Perry Spar, lives in Clarksburg, West Virginia. Shout out to Perry.
Shout out to Perry.
Great man.
Yeah.
I went on a fishing trip with him. He took me to Elkins, West Virginia. We went trout fishing. That was in April of 2021. Okay, so I'd been home for a while. Let's see. Yeah, that would be about five or six months. Okay, so, you know, I went to see him when we went fishing, and we drank some beers, and I decided after that trip that I was just going to hang up the towel on any alcohol at all. I said, I'm just going to not drink. I don't need it, and I'm going to stop drinking. Mm. So I did, and I haven't had a drink since. So my last drink was April 29th, 2021.
I love how you have the date. That's awesome.
You damn right have. I'll never forget that.
Yeah,
that's I made awesome. The choice.
Yeah.
And feel good about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, I was talking to my sister, Brittany, and she was like, you know, you should look into CrossFit. You really need to try CrossFit. I'm like, okay.
So, shout out to Brittany.
Did you work out or anything before that, like, conversation with her? Like, ever, like, since football in high school till that moment, did you, like, work out at all or anything?
I should touch on that a little. So, I didn't exercise much between college, the end of college, starting my career till 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working in 2014 to 2020, you know, 6 years or so, where I would run and, like, you know, I bought a Bowflex and I had some
dude, it was the Bowflex.
Oh yeah, I thought, man, that's great. And I had a garage space, you know, like one stall of the garage, you know, I converted, instead of parking my truck there, I put my Bowflex, and we had a treadmill, and I had some of those Bowflex
yep.
selective weights.
Yeah.
Man, I had the 92 pounders. I thought I was king shit. I love those things. My ex-wife stole, so she's
oh.
all. She didn't take the Bowflex. She gave me the Bowflex back, but she took the select weights and all the other stuff.
Was she doing 90-pound weight?
Who knows?
No, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Not my problem.
No. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
We should bring up the Bowflex to Major, see if he can add that.
Get Alex out of Bowflex.
Keep slaying on Bowflex.
Bowflex. I quickly realized it didn't have enough resistance. So I bought another Bowflex for $50.
No, you didn't.
And I got the additional 50-pound weights, which are rods, like fishing rods that bend. You know, it's a Bowflex. And I put those as an expansion pack on mine. So I had up to like 200 pounds or something resistance. And it was still not enough, you know.
That's so, pretty. So like you were
making dune buggies, making extra hard Bowflexes. I mean, what can't you do?
Yeah. Right. Wow. So you would say at this point, you know, when your sister reached out to you, you were maybe above average, like the average Joe. You know, you were slightly working out here and there, hitting the Bowflex.
Yeah, I was trying to stay in somewhat of shape,
yeah.
But, you know, my diet wasn't good. I wasn't sleeping well. And, you know, it was just like maybe twice a week I would run and try to hit the weights, you know. But there was I wasn't that, you know, I wasn't in the best of shape, you know, by any means. So, yeah, my health wasn't as a priority then as it is now.
So then Brittany said, hey.
Brittany, my sister, yeah, she was into CrossFit. My brother-in-law, her husband now, he was into CrossFit. That's where they met. And she was like, hey, you should really try, you know, CrossFit. I'm like, okay. So I got to look in on Google Maps, Parkersburg, West Virginia.
Mm.
Not a whole lot of options for CrossFit. At least I didn't know at the time. And so I was Googling. I was like, man, CrossFit, like, you really think that, like, there's a gym around here? Like, what am I going to do? Like, I would like to join a gym. I need to meet some people. Like, okay, well, CrossFit, okay. And boom, Piercing CrossFit came up. Shout out to Piercing CrossFit.
Boom. I love the shout out.
Yeah,
a lot
Brandon
of
Pierce.
Great.
Brandon Pierce, wonderful man. So I found Piercing CrossFit, and I called Brandon, which is his cell phone number. And I just told him, like, hey, I'm interested in this CrossFit thing. Like, and he was so good. You know, he was like, giving me the full rundown, told me when to be there, how much it would cost. I'm like, okay, I'll be there. And I think it was the next morning. I did the 5:30 a.m. And I was like, I'm changing.
Yeah.
I'm changing.
You know? So I did. And
what was the workout?
I don't remember.
Oh,
I should look back, actually.
Wait,
I could probably find that.
So when you're like, I'm changing, like, you did the 5:30 a.m. class, and you're like, yeah, this is, I'm in. Or were you like, I'm changing, like, I'm never going to 5:30 a.m.
I knew I wanted to change my lifestyle.
Yeah, I took it as before you even showed up, he's like, I'm changing my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that. It was like, I need to make some changes in my life because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not working the way it was
mm-hmm.
going, you know,
yeah.
it just wasn't healthy.
So at 5:30 a.m., let's do it.
5:30, let's try it. So I don't remember the workout. And then I consistently, you know, I just kept coming back. I was like, you know what? I know it's going to be a long road, you know, and I just kept telling myself, all right. You know, I remember having to make the choice every morning. I was like, okay, am I going to go to the gym or am I not going to go to the gym? And I just kept going, you know.
Especially at that 5:30, man.
That's hard. That's a hard choice to make, you know. Like some people that don't exercise, like, they might not understand that. But, like, if you want to make it happen, you got to get out there and make it happen, you know. So, yeah, for a stint, like, it took some, you know, mental conditioning to just get up, go do it, get up, go do it, eat food, get up, go do it, sleep. And I finally, you know, found a rhythm, met people, started enjoying life, and, you know, just kept doing it. So I kept going, kept going. Months roll by. People at the gym are like, you need a girlfriend. I'm like, I don't need a girlfriend. Like, no, I don't. Like, thanks, but no. They're like, no, you need a girlfriend. I'm like, why? They're like, just, you need a girlfriend. I'm like, okay. So they helped me make a Tinder account. And
you actually before on a Tinder account?
No, so well wait a second. So before that, oh man, maybe I should no. Yeah, I should. Okay. No, I should.
We can edit it out. You should.
All right. Before that, there was a girl at the gym that was older. She was in her 40s. I'm not gonna say any names, but she like
no, shout out for
went on a date with me.
Sugar.
Went on a date with me, and you know, just like as a practice run, you know, and you know that went okay or whatever, and then you know. She was asking if I wanted to go out again. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be available. And the reason is because at the same time I made a Tinder account and I was looking through some folks and I had been on a couple dates with some Tinder people and it just didn't work out. You know, it felt weird. Like dating's hard, you know, and trying to find someone you mesh well with is like the hardest thing in the world. And if you're out there just like intentionally trying to like make everyone work, you know, it's like, that's not the right way to do it. You know, it's just gotta be like organic. You have to like just naturally feel like you can be yourself and not be judged. And, you know, so some of those trial runs just weren't working, you know? And I just like realized that, you know, I just need to say no, you know? And, some of them were clingy, you know, they were like, hey, you know, well, are we boyfriend and girlfriend or not? You know, I'm like, saying, you know, and I'm just like, I met you one time. Like, no. Like we got ice cream together. Okay?
Oh,
like,
no.
And not to say that it's such a bad place, but like my hometown that I grew up in is Parkersburg, West Virginia. It's along the river. It's kind of a different culture there, you know, not in such a bad way, but like.
It's right across the river from Marietta, right?
Yeah. You know, and so like the selection of, you know, career type people is maybe a little less than in a big metropolitan area, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, so went through the ringer with some of those, and you know, I just wasn't meshing well with anyone, and kind of had given up hope. Really, I was just like, you know, I'm just happy just being me, you know, like, I need to work on myself before I can emotionally connect with somebody else, you know. And, I think I'm still working through all that. But it was getting easier and better, and I understood myself more, how I reacted to things. And, you know, I was feeling better. So figured might as well try. So anyway, kept looking on Tinder, and, I stumbled across a picture of a girl doing a handstand on the beach. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I like CrossFit. Handstands are awesome. Like, who is this chick? So, thumbed through her pictures. I'm like, dang, she's pretty cute. And, you know, I swiped. I don't know which way you swipe. Up
or, yeah, I don't know. I don't
left
know.
Or right. I don't know which
way. I thought you clicked buttons. Oh, no, you do swipe. You do swipe.
I don't remember. But I swiped in the direction of check mark. Yes.
Yes.
I think she's a candidate. So.
Wait, is this one we should get Kelsey in? Should we have her tell her side when she swiped you?
No, let's hear his story first.
We'll hear your show.
Okay. So I swiped yes, and I asked her, I was like, you know, we just got to texting about like what we like to do, like CrossFit and working out was like life, you know, it still is. Love it. And, you know, she said, well, I'm into CrossFit too. Like I used to go to Grandview when I was an undergrad, and then we like exchanged phone numbers, and instead of like the Tinder chat, you know, we're talking like on our cell phones. And I was like, cool. Like this is working. Like we're having a conversation. This is great. Like this person genuinely seems like interested in me, for me, you know, and that was just great. So I remember one of the first videos she sent me, or oh God, that might have came out wrong, was her doing a strict ring muscle up.
Oh, dang.
At Grandview. And I'm like, hell yeah. Awesome. Like, we need to work out. And we've not met yet at that point. So,
anyway. What a flex, by the way.
Yeah.
To be like, hey, yeah, here's me doing a strict ring muscle up. It's like only the hardest move in CrossFit.
Did you then send her something that was impressive to one up her?
No.
How can you one up that?
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I'm not sure.
You would have to do, like, I don't know, like,
freestanding handstand push ups or
like
something.
Yeah.
No, like a 300 pound snatch or something like that.
Yeah, you would have to do something. Yeah.
You have to.
She did multiple. It was like two.
Dang.
Well, she'll have to find a video. We'll show you.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll put the link in.
Yeah, we'll put another link.
It's in the Pantheon.
So, I suggested, this is me maybe not making the greatest decisions, but I was like, hey, do you want to go kayaking? Because me and all the people at the gym, like, we had just went on a kayak trip, and, like, it was a lot of fun, you know? The Ohio River's right there. And, like, I suggested as a first date we go kayaking. And I guess that wasn't a great first date.
Really?
I guess
that'd be a great date.
I don't know.
Wait a minute. Did she veto it, or did you do it, and she was like, this isn't hot?
No. She, like, I can't remember exactly what she said, but
she's like, no, thank you.
She wasn't certain who I was. And she thought that maybe kayaking wasn't the best way to meet somebody for the first time if you know not very much about the person.
Nice.
So
she's got skills and brains.
Oh, yeah. Kelsey is one of the smartest people I've ever met, for sure. So she, like, I can't remember if she just denied it or, like, said, like,
she
no
did, yeah.
And changed the subject or I don't remember. But we then decided, because previously in the chat I'd mentioned, you know, hey, if you want a place to work out, like, you said you're interested in CrossFit, I know you went to Grandview, like, if you are interested, like, you come to our gym anytime, like, there's a lot of cool people you can meet, you know, we just have a good time, like, it's fun, like, stop by anytime you want, you know, like, I had mentioned that, like, way beforehand, before, like, the kayaking thing. So anyway, that got brought up again, and she was like, hey, I might stop by the gym or something like that tomorrow.
What?
I'm like, cool, hell yeah. So anyway, all my friends at the gym were like, who's that girl? Like, they were looking at me weird, you know, and like, I had never met her before, and I was walking, she walked into the lobby right as I was walking in, and like, I shook her hand, I was like, hey, I'm Ben. And then Brandon, the gym owner, you know, started talking to her and like explaining drop in and
do you
all
remember
that.
What the workout was?
What's that?
What was the workout?
I don't remember. We'll have to look it up. Kelsey remembers.
Were you like super, my thought is if you meet her during a CrossFit workout, you're trying to like burn it down.
The only question that actually matters is did you go tarps off when the workout started?
She was on the other side of the gym, so I don't know. I probably took my shirt off.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, that's the culture, you know? Like,
yeah.
She was just doing her thing and I was doing my thing, you know?
Oh, so it's just like, hey man, like, let's get, like, you're enjoying CrossFit at the same time.
Yeah.
You're not like, okay, I like that. Yeah.
That's how we are now, you know? It's like the same thing, you know? Like, when we're at the gym, like, she works out and I work out and then we talk about it later, you know?
Do you guys ever do like team workouts?
We do sometimes.
How does that? Does that work? Or is that like no way out?
It's fun, yeah. Okay. I mean, any kind of movement, you know, it's just fun to, you know, work out.
Now that I'm remembering this, during dinner, Kelsey had mentioned when you guys first met, you had only been doing CrossFit for like maybe 5 months or so.
Yes.
At this time, well, she must have been better than you. She's doing certain muscle ups.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah.
She's really good at CrossFit. She's very fit, very athletic, and that's one of her gifts is being able to do more pull-ups than the guys, you know.
do we want to get her into
Yeah, okay. So what happens after the first date?
First date?
Yeah.
what happens after the
was
first
that
date.
Did you call that a date? Like, you're like, hey man, you came, we did work.
I think that's a date.
It's just, yeah, it's
I still think kayaking's a great date idea.
we went kayaking a couple days later.
No.
Really?
I'm the first time you meet somebody, why don't I take you out in the middle of the water where you can't get away from
yeah.
Like, it's a great date idea.
It's sink or swim.
Oh,
sink or swim, baby.
Hey,
come
somebody
on.
that's all in like that, like
that shows shit. Love and compassion. Just ride or die.
Okay.
You know?
You're like, hey man, I need to know.
Yeah.
Here's a picture of me doing strict muscle.
Regardless, they didn't do it on the first date, but they did it later. So...
Audience, fill out the poll down below if kayaking on the first date is a good idea.
I'm with David on this one. I won't lie.
Ooh, get bodied.
All right.
50-50.
Looking back now, I realize how that's probably not a good.
Right.
Ah, 75-25.
Yeah. I mean,
but like, I
fun.
Didn't think of it that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, you're like, hey, we had fun. It's intimate.
Yeah.
You like to
yeah.
do stuff. Yeah.
Water's
yeah.
calm. Like, it's
yeah.
just a relaxing, fun thing to do. I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah. yeah. And so you guys like hit it off. You're like, hey, man, this is good.
Yeah.
So when did you come to Ohio then?
So I lived in, so Kelsey, the way, so she was in West Virginia for her med school.
Okay.
She graduated from West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine in Lewisburg, and her away rotations had, her home base was like in Parkersburg, Vienna, West Virginia. And she chose to stay there and travel to some of the other away rotations. Like one was in Ripley, Charleston. But her home base and where she rented an apartment was in the same hometown that I was living at the time.
Mm.
So we hung out and, you know, for, let's see, we met in September of 22, September 2021. No, yeah. Yeah. September of 21 is when we met. And we moved up here in June of 23. Yeah, so we've been up here for a little over a year. Yeah, rented a place in Lewis Center and moved in together, you know. Like, we would spend time at each other's places, you know, my parents' place and her apartment, and, you know, kind of back and forth. And, yeah, we just decided, let's see where this goes and, you know, moved in together and rented a place for a year, and now Kelsey just bought her first house in Westerville here.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Dude, congratulations. That's a big deal.
Yeah, she's very excited about it.
Yeah.
They live like 3 minutes away from here.
Do you seriously?
Yeah.
I had no idea. We'll talk offline so we aren't giving all of our 1,000...
Yeah, what's your address?
You want to do your social security number, too? No, well, that's, yeah, what's, and it's like a super hard market to get into.
Yeah, she bought a fixer-upper for sure. And, yeah, we're slowly working on, you know, replacing.
Slowly?
Floors and, well, it depends on what you call slow. I mean, what do you mean?
I mean, I saw it a couple months ago. It's a completely different house.
Thanks. Yeah. It's a lot of work. But, you know, some of that was like contracting. You know, it's like people put the floors in, you know, but we're putting the baseboard up. People painted all the walls. You know, we had one of our neighbors, name's Dave Costco, painter. If you're in the Westerville area, use Dave Costco Painting Services. Great guy. He's our neighbor.
Shout out.
Yeah. Shout out to Dave. He's a great dude. But he would just, you know, come over and work at his own rates, just him. And he's, you know, doing the best quality work you can ask for. Painted the whole house in like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 days, something like that total. Like he's quick mm-hmm. and good. So yeah, we had him help on the walls painting. He helped paint the trim. But we're doing like the baseboards, a lot of the caulking, we're painting the doors, a lot of exterior things. Kelsey, I mean, we just work as we can, you know, and also try to have a mix of like doing things we also enjoy, like traveling and,
yeah.
You know, adventuring. We don't have kids, so like, you know, we're just trying to like do all the things while we're young that we can, you know, before we get old. Right?
Well, okay, I don't know if you guys know this, but they flew to Niagara Falls on Saturday and back.
Yeah.
That's
sick. We flew them to Niagara Falls and back.
Do you have your own plane?
When you say you flew, You flew them. Like,
yes.
I just said the same thing twice.
Yeah, you did.
You actually piloted the plane to Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
Did you take the plane, like, through the falls?
No, can't take it through the falls.
Okay.
Yeah,
you have to stay at 3,500 feet or higher.
So maybe the de-icing system would help.
It doesn't have de-icing. It would be sweet if it did.
It doesn't have air. It actually just has Kelsey with a hammer.
Shock it.
Manual.
Shock it.
It's the manual way. Somebody climbs it on the wing.
Yeah.
It doesn't have air conditioning either, which is also a huge drawback.
But it's your plane.
It's not mine. It's so we collectively, it's like a share crop.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So, like, me, my dad, and two other guys are in on the plane.
Cool.
And then we just schedule it whenever. It's a pretty old school. It's a 1974 Piper Warrior. Like, it's no technological advancement by any means. But it's a trainer, and it's a trainer for a reason. It's slow, and it's a good time builder, and it's where you learn all of the ins and outs of, like, how to be a pilot.
That's awesome. Would you call it 1974 Piper Warrior?
1974 Piper Warrior.
Okay. I was looking up images of that.
And that's awesome that you can just, like, go to Niagara Falls for the day. And come
that's
back.
Pretty cool.
Like,
yeah. I mean, it's it was a long day, you know?
Well, right. But, like,
which it took
you,
3 hours.
You can't, but yeah, but you can't do that just driving. Like,
did you park the plane somewhere, or, like, did you, like, land it somewhere?
No, you just jumped out.
No, I didn't know if you just, like, flew by it and then, like, came back around.
That's a fair question.
So, okay, so there's there's an airport nearby, Niagara Falls, and it's Niagara Falls International. It's right north of Buffalo International, and, you just fly through. There's Canadian airspace there. You make a flight plan. You go up there. You tell them your intentions. Say, hey, I want to do the tour of the falls, and you can do a flight tour. Basically, there's a procedure you have to follow, 3,500 feet or higher, right pattern. You have to turn at a certain point, and they know it's like a published thing.
Yeah.
And you just look that up ahead of time, so you know what you're doing. You have to go on this like universal frequency and explain where you are location wise, and then you do the loop. Then you contact the tower, let them know, hey, I'd like to land, and they direct you in and tell you when you can land, make sure the runway's clear, and you just land, park, and get
is there
through.
A fee to like park?
Yeah, okay. A lot of airports have landing fees and ramp fees and tie down fees. Like OSU is where I typically fly into here back and forth. And it's great because, so for those of you listening also, I'm working towards my ratings in hopes of hoping to become a career pilot at some point.
So like and subscribe.
Yeah, please like and subscribe. Any of you out there that are willing to invest in someone like me, I'm all ears. I love flying, love everything about it. And I'm trying to find a way to make that my work somehow.
Yeah.
Wait, like and subscribe your YouTube channel.
Oh.
That was a joke because he's talking about ratings.
I know.
I guess maybe
I'm,
that.
I'm circling
like,
back to
no,
the YouTube channel because
so,
I'm fascinated by this.
So when you said like you're working on your ratings and anybody that wants to, so tell me about more about that.
Oh, ratings. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. I guess I have to explain what a rating is. So ratings are, as you progress as a pilot, there's certain steps you have to make to be able to fly, you know, certain planes, right? You can't just like go fly a Boeing 707. With a private pilot's license, like you have to like work your way up and get the hours, become an ATP. So anyway, you start somewhere, which is low into the totem pole. You get your private pilot's license, PPL. Then there's multiple steps as you go. And basically, as you progress in those steps, you can fly for hire. So as a career, you can fly bigger, higher performance airplanes, and eventually, you know, if your goals are to go fly for the airlines, you have to get your ATP, which is the highest license, highest, certificate you can get from the FAA. Mm-hmm. And that's like, you can be, it's air transport pilot. And to get there, it's a long road. You have to have, I don't know all the criteria, but, thousands of hours. A lot of it's just experience. And then you have to pass check rides along the way and tests. So there's like written tests you have to take. And practical tests you have to take, like with a designated examiner that flies with you in the right seat and basically like scoring you on your to make sure you know like how to do everything.
So, you're really advanced driving tests,
yeah. It's like driving tests, very similar. Right now I'm working on my commercial rating, which will allow me to fly for hire. So, I have my private pilot's license, I just got my instrument rating a couple months ago, and now I'm working towards commercial rating. And it doesn't mean commercial pilot as in I can go fly an airliner. It just means that I'm a commercial pilot in that I could fly for compensation or higher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like people could pay me as a job to fly a plane.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll only be single engine land at the moment type category. I'll then get my multi-engine land commercial pilot's license. So then I'll have single engine, multi-engine. I want to become an instructor, a CFI. So that's also in the plan. Possibly CFII, probably. Build a bunch of hours and, try to fly corporate aviation. So maybe not like NetJets. I know NetJets, their headquarters is here in Columbus, which is very exciting. But that type of plane, Cessna Citations, Phenom. I don't know, maybe TBMs, turboprops, but Part 91 type work would be fun. That's my happy place. I mean, the way my mind works, I just love to be engaged with systems, and I like to fly, I like to be in the air, I like to understand and do hard things well, and I get a lot of joy out of that. Point A to point B, safe.
Yeah.
Do we have any follow-up questions? What's our time?
I was going to say, that's a really great place to end, actually.
Hour and 32.
Let's move on. I don't know if we've prompted you.
No, you did.
I did.
Pet peeve.
Oh, pet peeve. When people waste food. I hate it. When people throw away food. Like, they'll eat a little bit, and then they'll throw in the trash.
I did notice that you were a clean player today.
Dude, it's, like, does that not piss you off? Like, that's my biggest pet peeve.
That's my mom's biggest pet peeve.
Food wasters, man.
Dude, I love it. Like, and it's a real pet peeve for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just, like, came out, and that you were full force.
So,
I know.
We, every kind of couple of months or so, a bunch of Malaysian people. I'm Malaysian. We get together, we cook a bunch of food, and we have a bunch of people come together and just cook a bunch of food. My mom's biggest pet peeve is exactly that. Like, she's like, we spent so much time, so much effort, made all this food, and someone just eats one bite, throws away.
Oh man,
she gets so pissed. And I just literally, she's just yelling at me in the car, and I'm like, this wasn't me. I didn't do this. But I totally get it. People put all the blood, sweat, and tears, but love.
Here's what I like about that, though. That's like a real pet peeve for you. Like, I feel like sometimes on this, media outlet, there's some
fake pet peeves.
Imposters, maybe we'll just say that. Yeah, fake pet peeves.
What are you referring to?
What? Hmm?
Tell us what you're referring to, baby.
I'm just saying I felt that way.
What are your pet peeves?
My pet peeve is geese.
Geese?
Dude, straight up yesterday.
Like,
yesterday. Yesterday.
Yes.
I take a left turn. Okay. I'm driving. I'm literally driving to work. And as I'm driving, a flock of geese just crossing the road. There's a lady trying to go the other way, has to wait because there's geese crossing. Bro, fly! Fly! Oh my gosh, that is like,
we're gonna see you on a video of like getting
straight
out,
up.
Like,
I straight up, I was an inch away from like literally hitting a goose because I was like, man, I could totally hit this goose and just keep driving and no one would catch me. So, geese. And plus, they pee, they poop, they hiss. Don't even get me started with the guy in the wheelchair. Dude, there was a guy in a wheelchair, literally on the sidewalk, rolling his wheelchair, trying to enjoy his life, then gets surrounded by geese and can't move anywhere because he's in a wheelchair. The geese are blocking everywhere besides the grass. It's like, come on, geese. So, yeah.
Luke, what's pushing your peeve?
Well, everyone, that was a recap of Char's pet peeve.
My favorite moment of all of that was when Ben went honk.
Yeah, yes, that was a good, goose noise.
Yeah, I would say they're fine.
I would like to. So I was at Josh Cecil, RIP. I was at his wedding, on Saturday.
No way.
Yeah.
Where was it held?
At Sciota.
Here, but in town.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I was there with Kat, Redden, and Spencer. her husband, Kat, as a
episode on the podcast.
What
is her last name? I thought, what, is it Redden?
Oh, it's Haynes now.
It's Haynes. Okay, thank you.
I was like, sorry.
I'm pretty sure it's not. Okay.
Kat Redden slash Haynes. Well, when she was on the podcast, it was Redden.
Okay.
Good. Haynes. Anyway, so the first thing that she asked me when we get there is, did you look to see if there are fake
plants?
Fake plants and fake candles.
Were there?
Okay, number one, real candles. Thank goodness. My number one pet peeve is fake candles at weddings.
Okay.
Or just in general.
But mostly at weddings.
Mm.
Second is fake plants. If you notice a theme, it has to do with things being fake.
Mm.
There were some fake greenery going on there.
Mm.
I almost burned it down.
Yeah.
Almost burned it down. But then there were real flowers there too, so like I can't.
It cancels
those
out.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a pet peeve. It'll be a pet peeve just to make David angry. Because I think David's pet peeve is my pet peeve.
Oh, really? Biting?
No, I think your pet peeve is when I have a pet peeve.
Oh. It's not so much a pet peeve, it just makes me giggle.
Anyway, so we were, the wedding, was, the ceremony was outside, okay? It was on a golf course, okay? So there was a green right there.
Yeah.
Some guy got his golf cart stuck in the middle of the ceremony, like on the side of the road. That's not
awesome.
It. That's not it. My problem is,
my pet peeves are people getting their golf carts stuck during weddings.
No, he was trying to be really polite, and then he was like, F it, I'm going to try to... And then he got it stuck.
Oh, yeah.
Ask Cap.
Yeah.
My pet peeve was whoever was officiating. I know you've officiated weddings before. Whoever was officiating, I think it was her uncle or something, talked about himself.
Ooh.
Like the whole time.
How?
He was like, he just related everything back to him being her uncle and just being like, oh, I remember when, you know, you were little and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dude, it's not about you.
Mm.
It's clearly about them. And he said one nice thing about Josh. I was like, maybe not so much of a pet peeve as much as it was like awkward.
Too bad mode.
Like Kat and Spencer and I were like, This isn't great.
So would you say your pet peeve is when you make something about yourself when it should be about someone else?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's how you would summarize it?
Sure.
Okay. Great. I'm glad we got
that.
There.
Yeah. I'm for that. Good.
Ben, thoughts on this pet peeve?
Your thoughts are valid.
Wow, validated pet peeves. How about
thanks,
that?
Ben.
Do you have any other pet peeves, Ben?
Any other pet peeves?
How do you feel about shopping carts? That one really irks people.
Yeah, people do hate that.
How do I feel about shopping carts? I think they have a purpose. I mean, what else would you
them
use to...
No, no, I don't mean
actual...
Like,
oh,
I don't
use one when I go to the store.
Yeah, I don't mean the actual purpose of it.
Like the ones that the wheels don't work?
We need to land this plane. We need to land this plane.
I mean when people don't put their shopping carts in the actual, like, corral when they're done using
it. Oh, yeah, obviously, yeah. That's, like...
Yeah, those people suck.
That's the worst thing. I typically will bring... Actually, no. Sometimes I'll bring the cart back to the where it came from.
Mm.
When people put them like in the parking lanes and then they drift over and like bump into people's cars, like, yeah, that's definitely a pet peeve.
Mm.
But
2 minutes are on the clock. We ask you rapid fire questions. You just shoot from the hip.
Okay.
They're easy questions.
Okay.
Yep. We'll start. I'll start.
Okay. 3, 2,
go. What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Let's go to 110. How was the focaccia bread for you tonight?
Focaccia was on point.
Good.
Did a fantastic job.
Sweet. Just one.
Boom. Are you a reader?
I don't enjoy reading, but the older I get, the more I can read a book and enjoy it. Yeah.
Cool. If you had to say, if you had to describe your CrossFit workout, what would it be?
My CrossFit workout, if I could describe it, what would it be? I don't really have a favorite per se. it would be an Alex Majors workout. Legless rope climbs, ring muscle ups, and dumbbell bench.
Oh, God.
For sure. Oh. I'll never forget those training days. Ever.
What's your favorite thing about Kelsey?
Favorite thing about Kelsey? That she listens. Mm. Mm.
Do you listen to podcasts? If so, favorite?
I do sometimes go in spurts of listening to podcasts. I don't think I have a favorite. It just depends on the content that I'm trying to learn. Mm.
Mm. Favorite aviation movie?
Favorite, Top Gun.
Okay.
By far.
The original or Maverick?
I like both of them, but the original's really classic.
Hell yeah.
If you, or would you rather,
no,
have an octopus stuck,
no,
to your face,
I have a question,
for the rest of your life, or be stuck in the desert naked?
Neither.
No, you have to pick one.
Why
neither
would you,
that's fine.
Why
if
you
had it, if you had a billboard that you had to put up for the entire world to see, what would you put on? Favorite fairies, picture, anything.
Big smile.
Big smile.
Just somebody genuinely enjoying something.
Oh. Favorite ice cream flavor. Ooh. And from where?
Ben and Jerry's mint cookie.
Oh.
My previous question.
Oh gosh.
Octopus on your face or
what were they again?
Stuck in the desert.
Huh, funny.
The
Our desert. 2 minutes is up.
I think we have time for this.
Wait, so explain.
I ask this to every podcast guest.
Okay, so an octopus stuck to your face.
For the rest of your life.
Forever.
Or be stuck in the desert naked.
Be stuck in the... I would say probably the octopus. Because if you were stuck in the desert, you know how lonely that would be?
It's not forever, though. Is it stuck forever?
You have to go with what's given to you.
I picked the octopus because if it's stuck there forever, I could keep cutting it off, like parts of its tentacles, and eating it for dinner.
It's free food.
Oh, and they grow back.
Yeah, they grow back.
Damn.
So gross. That's worse than I thought.
How do you feel about seafood? You like seafood?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, West Virginia, North Carolina stuff. More North Carolina. Do you like barbecue? How's the barbecue?
I had a bad experience with barbecue, and I haven't enjoyed it since.
Wow.
But I tried it recently from the one over here by
Ray Race.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're pretty good. Yeah, but it's like I had food poisoning from some barbecue. And I threw up like all night. Kelsey and I were actually on a camping trip.
That's
both had food poisoning.
Hard to get over.
Yeah.
Because you can still taste it. It's so
right now, actually, for me, it's Chinese food.
Chinese?
I had Chinese and then got really, really sick. Haven't had Chinese since. So.
Darn.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. I will speak for myself.
Speak for yourself.
Okay. I have really, really enjoyed getting to know you better. And I hope that I said at dinner, we see you at the on top of the leaderboard every day, and it's, we know that there's more to people than a CrossFit score. But this was very impactful for me. So thank you for sharing your story.
You can actually speak for me as well.
Okay.
That was good.
Yeah, me too.
No, exactly what Luke said. I think when I first met you, 5:30 p.m. or whatever, I knew from seeing leaderboards, but dude, thank you. Like, thank you for sharing your life with us. Thank you for opening up. I hope you know, even through some of the stuff that you shared and how you've grown, Even just hearing that, dude, like, that encourages me to want to be better. Better in the sense of, like, man, I want to work harder. Like, I see the way you are. Like, you're at the top of the leaderboard for a reason. It's because you freaking worked hard. You're like, hey, you know what? I want to change my life. Hit up this guy that I found on this Google listing for CrossFit Gym, and just like, I'm going to change my life. I want to work hard. And I think there's part of me that's like, oh, there's these things that I want. Hey, if you want it, just go work hard. Like, these things aren't something that I can just, these things aren't out of the world that I can't grab. It's like, it's right there. Hey, if you want something, just go get it. And two, you're also pushing me to, I feel like even just hearing you and the way you're talking and how you've grown and even sharing about your relationship with Kelsey, and it's like, man, I want to be better in the relationships in my life as well. So I hope you know that, and we're thankful for you. So maybe one day, you know, I'll be able to do those strict muscle ups like Kelsey. So, but you gotta work hard. Doesn't just come naturally, but we're thankful for you.
Yeah.
So
thank you very much for having me, and thank you for helping me through this journey, and really enjoy your all's time and the encouragement and the kind words you had to say. And I'm glad we had the chance to be able to do this, and glad I could share some aspects of my life that I'm dealing with. And if any of that helps anybody else, I just hope it does. You know, you're not alone, and you know, nothing's impossible, and you can make it through. But people are what help you get through those things. Mm. So, yeah.
Audience, thanks for checking out the podcast. Sorry for the long hiatus, but see ya.